And Matters International as well, 746, 14 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by our friend Bruce Jenelson, professor of public policy, political science at Duke University, previously worked in the State Department, and on the Middle East process. The president was on the plane, so it was kind of hard to understand what he said, but I transcribed it. He said, there seem to be some people killed that aren't supposed to be killed. These are violent. If you call them leaders, I don't know if they're leaders. It's just they rule through violence, but we're looking at it very seriously. The military is looking at it, and we're looking at some very strong options. We'll make a determination. Bruce Jenelson, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Tommy. Hope you are as well.
Yes, sir. Let's talk about this in relation to what happened during the Arab Spring. First of all, if you can give us a brief reminder of what happened during the Arab Spring. There was some protests in Iran. Iran is Persian, not Arab, just to clear that up right away. You take it from here. Bruce, please.
Yeah, so in 2009, there was what was called the Green Revolution in Iran. I actually was in the Obama administration of the State Department when this was happening. And what happened was the election was stolen from a more reformist, moderate candidate and given to a guy named Ahmadinejad, who, you know, wasn't a religious leader but ruled very brutally, and the people in the streets kind of rebelled. It ended up being put down. And then we've seen this come time and again. About 2-3 years ago, the Iranian people went to the streets again over the killing of a young woman. And this time, even more people apparently in more parts of the country, not just the big cities, and they're being even more brutally repressed by the government.
So this comes down to whomever controls the military controls the government. Accurate or not?
Well, you know, it's a country that, since they had their revolution back in 1979, that put the Islamist regime in power and got rid of the Shah, who, by the way, was a pretty repressive leader himself, that we supported because he cooperated with us on foreign policy.
Let me jump in for a second, Bruce, if I may, because we tend to put white hats and black hats on people. And although the Shah played nice with the United States, what was life like for people in Iran under the Shah?
It was pretty bad. He had a secret police called the Savak, and part of the reason he ended up falling and the Islamists coming to power was we very much went along with his repression, and there was no other, like, alternative to opposition, right? We repressed them all, and the then Ayatollah Khomeini was out of the country, came back in, and rallied people around, you know, being anti-Shah, and then they maneuvered out some of the more, you know, secular moderates, and they took power. So right now you have the son of the Shah, who's been in exile in the United States, who's probably 60, 65 years old, and who's saying, I'm ready to come back. I don't think that's what the Iranian people want. They want to find a way to go forward, not backward.
Is there any way we would ever see a democracy in Iraq, or would they have to get past the theocracy first?
You know, you could find a democracy there over time, but it really depends, you overthrow a leader, and then what happens next often is turmoil, right? And so in Iran, it's interesting. The Iranian population, it probably has had the highest rates of literacy and education of any country in the Middle East except Israel, right? And women have had a role before. They continue to have a role now, repressed by the regime, but still have a role. So the basics are there. The kind of democracy they might have would be very different than we think of it. And to be honest with you, I'm not sure so many countries want to copy us right now. So it would be less repressive. It would be nationalist. It doesn't mean that it would be totally cooperative with the United States. It would still have to work out a relationship with Israel. But the fall of this regime does not necessarily lead to some, you know, Thomas Jefferson or something coming to power.
What is the feeling of the country as it relates to, the religion, the Shah and the theocracy? They rule everything. And I'm just wondering if the people are lapsed in their beliefs or not, or are they as pro-religion, and this is all a terrible way to put all of this, but I think you understand where I'm going with it. Are they as pro-religion as the mullahs would have us think?
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it, because they're not. You know, this is 40-some-odd years since the revolution, so you've had two or three generations. And when the revolution first happened, a lot of people said, the Shah was so terrible, so let's try this other way. Well, it's now their kids and grandkids that are there, and they're like, you know, the bad news about the Shah is like old news, right? What I know now is this regime is very repressive in all my life, right? How women have to dress on the streets, what kind of education you get. And they're proud nationalists, you know. In fact, when we bombed Iran in June, it didn't lead to this pro-American outcry. It was like, we don't like this regime, but we don't want anybody coming in here to run our country either.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up there when we come back, because that goes to the president's comments that I read earlier, and it might be, okay, you know, we're picking at each other and we're fighting it out amongst ourselves, but we don't want a third party to jump in here. We're talking to Bruce Jenelson, our friend, professor of public policy, political science at Duke University, worked in the State Department on the Middle East peace process, so he's not just kibitzing. He's been there. He's done it. He's been in the rooms. He knows. 751 traffic now, WWL. 7:57, 3 till 8. Quickly back to Bruce Jenelson, our friend when it comes to Middle East affairs. He's worked on the Middle East peace process under a couple of different presidents. Bruce, what can the United States do when you come right down to it as far as either aiding people that are protesting or having anything to do with changes in the administration of Iran, et cetera?
Yeah, it's interesting. There are a lot of things that I criticize on President Trump sort of being pretty much of a bully. But in this situation, it's actually helping. It's got the government a little bit, you know, worried, intimidated. But I don't know what military action does here. You know, it's not like you go in and you can snatch the leaders. There are too many of them and it's too spread out. You know, two things. One is, this is actually where you really need diplomacy. If we were willing to mobilize our European allies and others from around the world, the Australians, the Japanese, and even some countries that are, you know, sort of so-called global south, to put pressure on this government, then we'd have a real united front, and we'd also benefit from what they know about it. We have not had an embassy there since the hostage crisis back in 79 and 80. And, you know, one of the consequences of that, we don't know much about the country. When I had my security clearances, it was in the State Department in 2009, 2011. The best briefing I got on Iran was from the Australian ambassador to Iran, because he was there, his people were talking to people. So, we may have a couple sources that the CIA has, but we don't really know the country well enough to be the ones to figure out, you know, how to make this government fall and what you do on the day after.
How do the other players in the Middle East feel about what's going on in Iran now, and what ideally would they like to see?
So on the one hand, Iran is Shia, and the others, like the Saudis, are Sunni. And we've always seen that as a big, unbridgeable split. The reality is, over the last 3-4 years, the Saudis and the Iranians have started talking to each other. When we bombed Iran in June, despite other good relations with the Saudis said, we're standing by our brother here, our Persian brother. But on the other hand, you know, they all worry, since they're not good democracies, about governments falling. And so they kind of don't want to see this government fall, because it might affect their people, too.
So when it comes to the divide between Shia and Sunni, is that becoming less and less as people age? People grow up, or is the religion, the fundamentalism, still there? I know there will always be radicals, but generally speaking,
they have a lot of shared interests. So you have Saudis, United Arab Emirates, Qatar, all of which are Sunni, have improved their relations with Iran, and they have a lot of interest together. So they're never, you know, the bridges are being built much more than people said was possible, given the Sunni-Shia difference.
Thank you, Bruce. Appreciate your time, as always. Have a happy new year. Professor of Public Policy, Political Science at Duke's. We'll come back. Thank you, sir. We'll talk to Eric Smith about Venezuelan oil in Louisiana.